Okay, hello and welcome to the Faultline podcast, the audio companion to the weekly B2B publication covering disruption in media technologies. My name's Tommy Flanagan, and this is our first episode following the Amsterdam extravaganza, that is IBC. And to celebrate the occasion, we have a very special guest this week, someone who this time last year was just getting to grips with taking a leap of faith from being one of the most revered journalists in the streaming media industry to a C-suite executive at an actual streaming software vendor. And I know some of my introductions for guests on the podcast can be extremely cheesy, but this is genuinely someone I've admired right from the beginning of my own career as a journalist because, you know, honestly, top-level technology trade journalism is hard to come by. So please welcome, all the way from Milwaukee, USA, it's Erik Schumacher Rasmussen, the former editor-in-chief of Streaming Media Magazine and now chief marketing officer at Ideas. How are you today, Erik?
Wow, who is that guy? That's a hard act to follow. Thank you so much, Tommy. I'm great. How are you?
Awesome. Thank you. No, I'm really looking forward to this. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well.
We will dive into our all-important post-mortem from IBC 2023 shortly, but as is tradition on the Faultline podcast, we're going to start from the beginning, which in our case, Erik, is not actually that long ago because we only met at Streaming Media East in Boston, May 2022, which is, you know, this is a fantastic conference that you've chaired and emceed for many years. I'm not sure why it took me 7 years into my career to attend a Streaming Media event, but, you know, it's better late than never. And one of my standout memories from my debut at Streaming Media East last year was being parked at a table near the front next to you before one of the panel sessions. And as you were then obviously the editor of Streaming Media Magazine, I said to you, Erik, can I ask you a question from one editor to another? How the hell do you juggle your editorial duties and organize a conference like this? And I was surprised by the openness of your answer. You said something along the lines of, Tommy, honestly, I can't do both. And you told me that you were trying to get some editorial support, but, you know, didn't have the resources at the time for whatever reason. And, you know, that was kind of the first clue that there was some movement occurring behind the scenes, I suppose, with your career. And it wasn't long after that that you decided to take on a new venture with UK-based Ideas. So, I mean, first question is, can you kind of reminisce for us why you decided to make this career change after a long and illustrious career in journalism and how this opportunity came about?
Yeah, of course. And, you know, when I answered that question as openly and frankly as I did, you know, it was just a recognition that really, if you're programming conferences, especially for a year, as we were doing at the time, two in person and two online. I mean, that's a full-time job, right? In and of itself, as is editing a magazine and a website. And so, for a number of years, I was juggling essentially two full-time jobs. You know, I had associate editors in the past. When the pandemic hit, it was right after my previous associate editor, Troy Dreyer, had left. And, you know, there was a hiring freeze, and that hiring freeze extended much longer than I would have liked. But in response to your question about why the change, it wasn't a change I was actively looking for. You know, I was enjoying everything about streaming media. I love programming the conferences especially. You know, it's funny, as a journalist by background and experience, I was kind of surprised to find out how much I enjoyed programming conferences, finding speakers, putting together panels, moderating, being on stage. I sort of fell into it unexpectedly, but I wasn't looking for, I wasn't planning to leave streaming media, but I had known Dom Robinson, who had been a contributing editor for Streaming Media for pretty much the whole time I was there. I started with Streaming Media in 2004 or so, and Dom had written frequently for me, you know, way back when he was with his own CDN, Global Mix. And then, you know, in 2010 or so, he and two other people started this company called Ideas. And Dom and I are great friends, and we always talked about how fun it would be if we could possibly find a way to work together on a more formal and more involved basis. And a little over a year ago, Ideas was getting set to launch its first product. Ideas had essentially been a consultancy since its founding. Someone recently referred to ideas as the black ops of video, which I kind of like, because people knew of the company, but they didn't know exactly what the company did. And they were getting ready to launch a product. They saw me, and I think they saw my longevity in the industry, my contacts, hopefully my storytelling ability, to use the cliche, telling your story, right? It was just a matter of the stars aligning at the right time.
I'm glad you mentioned Dom already, because, you know, when this came about, you know, I had a bit of beef with Dom, because I told him straight up, Dom, what have you done? You know, you've just poached one of the best journalists in the industry from an already very small pool of quality journalists. But, you know, I guess that's all water under the bridge now, because you've gone on to do some cool things with ideas. And as you've already said, this is a company that's been around a long time, but was kind of virtually non-existent to anyone not really in the know. And, you know, it's a company that struggled to get its message across and properly explain what it does to anyone who isn't, you know, a qualified streaming engineer. And looking back through the extensive Fault Line archive, you know, it was only November 2021 that we first featured ideas on the pages of Fault Line. And the pitch then, it was positioned kind of loosely as an advanced video pipeline provider. And, you know, I had a briefing with Dom and Adrian at the time, and we kind of collectively settled on describing ideas in my article as a developer of software that others can turn into SaaS platforms to support live streaming at scale. And that was very simplistic, admittedly, at the time. But then it gets worse, because in the same piece, I then used an analogy which reads, sorry to quote myself, but it says, what this unassuming software vendor does best is tailor suits that fit so perfectly, it will have you sending every suit in your current wardrobe off to the nearest charity shop. not my greatest work, I know. But, you know, the point I'm trying to make, Eric, is that because of, you know, my total disservice to ideas nearly 2 years ago, this arguably sowed the seed for the realization that a revolution in marketing was required at ideas. And ultimately, that opened the door for a CMO. And here we are. So I just wanted to say, yeah, you're very welcome for that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, right. And I do want to briefly say, you know, in regards to your comment about, you know, me leaving streaming media and the size of streaming media, I've really been impressed with what streaming media has done since I've left. Steve Nathans-Kelly has taken over as editor. They've brought in some outside assistance with the conference programming. Evan Shapiro, who everyone knows these days, has been helping with some of that. And so I'm really excited to see what's happening with streaming media. You know, part of me, you know, is there's a little bit of frustration because I'm seeing them do some things that I had kind of tried to get them to do for a number of years while I was still there. But whatever, you know, if a little shakeup is what it took for that to happen, I think that's great. And it's funny you mentioned the challenges that Ideas has had or had getting their message out previously, because I remember probably 6 or 7, maybe not quite that long ago, but 4 or 5 years ago, when I was editor of streaming media, I remember Dom coming to me and saying he was a little frustrated that Ideas had never received any coverage and any editorial coverage in streaming media, to which my first response was, have you ever sent out a press release? He said, no. And you know, say what you will about press releases. You know, as a journalist, you do rely on them for at least an entree into what a company is doing, even if the press release itself doesn't have a lot of meat to it.
Absolutely. I mean, I take a lot of pleasure in my job in absolutely butchering press releases, but I wouldn't be able to do my job without them in the first place. So yeah, they are absolutely necessary. And you know, speaking about butchering, and, you know, following my introduction about how I butchered Ideas marketing before you came on board, that tees you up perfectly, Eric, to give us the high level pitch now about what NORSC is and how this, you know, came about, and how this is kind of shaking up, you know, some of the established old guard, I suppose, in the value chain of developing and deploying video streaming workflows.
Yeah. And, you know, it's hard to, I still find myself, even after a year, you know, there's a little bit of discomfort I have with how easily I have fallen into the role of tooting a vendor's horn, right? But that goes back to the fact that I wouldn't have joined Ideas if I didn't think that the tech was as cool as it is. And so, as I said, back in May of 2022, Ideas was working on its first product, which then became Norsk. Norsk is a low-code live streaming SDK that allows developers, even if they don't have extensive media, video, and audio experience, to build fairly complex and dynamic live streaming workflows using, you know, literally just, you know, you can build a simple source in adaptive bitrate ladder out workflow in 6 or 7 lines of code, any code pretty much. The code that Norsk is written on is extremely complex. And if I go any further, I'm going to get above my pay grade, so I won't. But, you know, it was simple enough that even I, a lowly journalist, could understand the code at the time.
Yeah, that's the entire point, I suppose. And, you know, there are a lot of vendors out there that, you know, might be expert in codecs, but, you know, not necessarily expert in high distribution SaaS platforms. I understand that kind of Idea's secret sauce, if you like, you know, has long been in creating these like really tightly tailored bespoke workflows, hence my poor suit analogy from earlier. So with Norsk, am I right in saying, you know, this kind of marks a move away from that bespoke value? And because, you know, the technology has finally been productized, and in doing so, that kind of deliberately cannibalizes the core consulting business as you grow the product revenues. Is that kind of how you view it?
That's exactly the strategy. We often say that we built Norsk so that we could get out of our own way, so that companies wouldn't be reliant on coming to us every time they wanted a change in their video workflow, so that they could build the kinds of things for themselves that Ideas had been building for them for over a decade.
And, you know, what I like with Norsk is that it's kind of uncharacteristically bullish about, you know, disruption, which is not kind of what Ideas has been about before. And then, you know, this is, as you've just said, this an SDK built to reduce complexity and decrease time required to develop custom live streaming workflows. And then by simplifying and speeding up those processes and having customers not need to worry about rendering logic and streaming protocols, Norsk is disrupting and dislodging these established suppliers who, you know, make a lot of money from shifting monolithic software to iron out those live streaming processes at scale. So I'm hoping, Eric, that you can slam down your Mjolnir, I hope I pronounced that correctly, on the competition here, and tell us what sort of systems and what suppliers used by your prospective customers that Norsk is well suited to switching out.
Oh, geez. You know, we really do. we really do, you know, philosophically, we've avoided saying that we are a replacement for X, Y, or Z. And I know why. I know you want me to name X, Y, and Z. I'm not going to do that, only because one of the things that we've discovered as we've gone to market, and this is both an opportunity and a challenge, is that when, you know, that's the first question someone asks us is, well, who are your biggest competitors? And there are solutions out there that do part of what Norsk does, but none that do exactly what Norsk does. And so that's been, as I said, that's been, you know, there are solutions like Wowza and Mux that are amazing at what they do. They don't do everything that Norsk does, though. So I did name names, but I wouldn't necessarily say those are our direct competitors, because we're doing something fundamentally different and I think bigger and broader than just about anybody out there.
Halfway through that answer, I was thinking, I'm not sure what I expected. Using one of the oldest tricks in the book against a trained journalist, but then you ended up naming two anyway.
And then I stepped into it. But honestly, and I mean, that really is the very first thing we say when we meet with a potential customer, is that if there's a solution in the market that does exactly what you want it to do, use it. But it's when you need to customize those solutions that that things get a little sticky. Mm-hmm. Or the alternative then becomes working very hard on customizing and integrating those solutions into other solutions. Or at the other end of the extreme, it's having to build your own live streaming workflow from scratch, and that's a heavy lift, both in terms of manpower and time and resources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe Telestream a bit moving might add to those two names as well.
Well, again, and you know, I dropped those two names because they do come up occasionally in our conversations, but yeah, you would have to build a best of breed solution that brings together multiple vendors to do what NORSC allows you to do.
And from competitors to partners slash customers, you know, I recently did an interview with GNL, the German, you know, media processing and distribution vendor, shortly after NORSC launched. And that was, of course, one of the first companies to actually deploy NORSC. And I found out that, you know, the business is undergoing something of a rebirth, you know, as it pivots from services to products after, what, 23 years of building bespoke video streaming workloads for broadcasters, which happened to be a very similar strategy to Ideas with NORSC. And I thought, well, clearly that's no coincidence. You know, this is a trend of two vendors, you know, long in the tooth, specializing in bespoke video delivery pipelines, experts in encoding and CDNs and microservices, looking for alternative revenue streams by productizing those skills. So, I mean, do you think, Eric, this is a result of the ripple effect from the disruption and happening in traditional CDNs, you know, and that's kind of now reaching out to, you know, the systems integrator type vendors, you know, and perhaps because in the current economic climate, people also have less money to tinker with for those bespoke, you know, consulting systems? Or would you argue that that is, in fact, pure coincidence and I'm talking nonsense?
A little of both, maybe. I mean, not that you're talking nonsense, but I think there is an element of coincidence there. I think that, as you mentioned, you know, CDNs are finding that the core product of delivering bits and bytes has been so commoditized that they're having to diversify. At the same time, you mentioned the economic forces at play, and I know we're going to get to IBC, but certainly one of the biggest themes that came out of IBC this year was that people are paying closer attention to the bottom line than ever. And both from a vendor side and from a media publisher side, the emphasis is shifting from a focus on growth to a focus on profitability. And as we've seen, unfortunately, with so many of the layoffs that have happened in the last 12 months, even companies that are relatively well-funded are having to trim fat. And so we do see an opportunity there for a solution like NORSC.
Mm-hmm. And that theme is emphasized because I couldn't be at IBC this year due to family reasons. But
congratulations, by the way.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate that. I'm extremely tired. I'm glad this is audio only and you can't see my bags. But yeah, so I had a team of three guys at IBC. So we were well represented in Amsterdam and editing the pieces. Two of my guys sent almost identical headlines about purse strings being tightened, so had to hold one back and do some juggling and editing. But as we're on the subject of IBC, you know, this was your second, I believe, as CMO, but the first for NORSC. So what was the kind of reception like from customers and competitors also for NORSC, and more importantly, are you missing the comfort of the press room?
I did miss the comfort of the press room a little bit, although I must give a shout out to the IABM. We became members of the IABM this year, and they've got a lounge that we used for almost all of our meetings, and it was almost as good.
Oh, is that the one with the really expensive water?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I thought so.
yes, was the coffee and juice still free in the press room? I need to ask you.
Oh, I wasn't there this year. I'll find out from the guys, but I'd be shocked if it wasn't.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I definitely missed the press room, but at the same time, I keep telling my wife how I'm consistently surprised by how much I am enjoying being on, I don't want to say the other side of the table, although there's an element of that, right? In terms of the reception of to NORSC, again, this goes back to my sort of first response as a journalist, meeting with the guys from Ideas and learning about this product they were working on, and being able to understand it, seeing what it could do, seeing the kinds of workflows that it could build in a very straightforward and simple fashion. That reaction has been the same from customers, potential customers, partners, potential partners throughout. Was even if they come into it with some skepticism, at some point in the meeting, you can see the change on their face when they realize that, okay, if this works as it says it does, and it does, It's really pretty amazing. There were some literal jaw-dropping moments, or jaw-drop moments in our meetings. One person said, "You've solved my streaming problems for the next 10 years," which is pretty gratifying. And so the response has been good. I mean, there is some skepticism out there. One of the most interesting comments that that we received was, one person, and I won't say who, nor will I say what company they're from, said, you know, the problem you might run into here is that for some engineers, it's not complicated enough. You know, and that I think speaks to some entrenched attitudes in the media industry. You know, there's value and comfort in the complexity and that level of expertise that, oh, I'm one of the few people in the world who can do these things. And now there's something out there that means other folks are going to be able to do it as well.
Definitely. And by jaw-dropping moments, first thing I think is that means some huge checks were signed.
No comment. No, there were. It's funny. One of my colleague, my former colleague at Streaming Media, the publisher there, you know, asked me the same question when he and I had a coffee after the show. And one of the things that I've really learned that I had no idea about when I was a journalist was just how long the sales cycles are in this industry. You know, we had some great meetings, and there are going to be some good follow-up meetings in the coming weeks. But, you know, we're still following up on meetings we had last year. And it seems like the sales cycles have, if anything, gotten a little longer than even a year ago.
I am notoriously impatient. You know, if a company tells me that, oh, we might have this customer soon, and they dangle a little carrot and they tease me, and then, you know, a couple of weeks pass and they don't follow through, then, you know, we'll start maybe writing about it in Faultline and saying that they were bluffing. But yeah, I don't know. I could transfer well to that world because I'm so impatient.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. I mean, these are not 2 or 3 week sales cycles. They're 6, 12, sometimes 18 months. And so that's been an education. That's been an eye opener, right? I came out of last year's IBC, which was very positive for Norskan Ideas, not as positive as this year, but I had to set that impatience aside a little bit and realize that these things take a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, once those commission checks start coming through. And, you know, there's a question that as a journalist I get asked a lot, and it's one of those questions that, I don't know, for some reason just really irks me, but at every single trade show, several people ask, oh, so did you see anything cool? What was the most innovative thing you saw at the show? I mean, you probably didn't get as much time to, you know, go around every hall and run to every corner of the show as you would in previous years. But did you see anything cool? Did anything stand out for you? Or was it just kind of the usual case of same companies, same technologies, trimming a bit of fat, transforming into SaaS offerings?
Yeah, I would say it's the latter. Although, as you said, that is primarily a function of the fact that, you know, we were in back-to-back meetings from 9:30 a.m. on Friday until 2 p.m. on Monday, and you know, literally had an hour break at one point over the weekend. So I didn't get to see much of what was on the show floor. I wasn't seeing all the press releases come in like I used to. So, boy, my inbox is a lot emptier now than it was when I used to get press releases.
Oh, God. Mine is, to quote the great Logan Roy from Succession, the size of fucking Argentina right now.
I remember those days. I definitely remember those days. But yeah, so I can't speak to any particular product launches that jumped out at me because I just didn't see that many. You know, more of what I got out of the show was, over the course of 4 days of discussions, was a sense of some of those trends you know, your journalists came back with, the focus on cost cutting being probably top among them.
Mm-hmm. And I believe Ideas and Norsk are going to feature in one of our write-ups this week. Don't hold me to that. I'm pretty sure they're
speaking of impatient. Yes, I've been watching your post IBC reports, and I noticed we haven't been in there yet. So I'll have to check in the next couple issues.
Yeah, then I think I ruffled more feathers on LinkedIn with one post than the entire 14,000 issue of Faultline did last week. If you want to go to my LinkedIn profile and see what that's all about. I'm not going to name drop on the podcast because the person in question doesn't deserve the coverage. But anyway, moving on.
I can't. I'm quickly going to LinkedIn. I can't pay attention to you right now.
Oh no! Do it. Do it. So now from IBC, kind of circling back to where we began at the beginning. Actually, before Streaming Media Magazine, it's when you were a reporter at MTV in the early 2000s, where you interviewed, you know, various music artists, including Don Henley and Green Day. I've got written down here, and I have a very foggy memory from a bar in Boston earlier this year that a certain musical legend interviewed by you in your MTV days ended up giving you an affectionate nickname. So I'm hoping you can jog my memory and tell us what the story behind that is, Eric.
Yeah, I was a reporter for MTVnews.com from 2000 to late 2001. Prior to that, I was at Addicted to Noise. And it's funny, as we went into this interview, I sort of looked back on my own LinkedIn and was reminded that I was a journalist. Addicted to Noise, I wasn't reminded that I was a journalist. I knew that. But, I remember that Addicted to Noise, who I had written for, and they became SonicNet, they were one of the first music news websites to embed streaming audio in their articles. So it was really cutting edge at the time. But while I was with MTV, I was on the Napster beat. So that meant typically lots of, you know, fairly straightforward court reporting about the lawsuits that were going on. But every once in a while, a major artist would want to speak out on the topic. And one day the head offices in New York City got a call from Prince's people, and Prince wanted to talk about file sharing. And so because I was on the Napster beat, I got to interview Prince. Now, I did not get to sit down with him face to face, nor was I on the phone with him. It was an IRC chat interview. Our editorial team in New York made sure and vetted that it was actually Prince I was connected to. But in the course of talking to Prince about file sharing and artists earning a living and what quote unquote stealing music from using Napster meant for the artist, we got to the topic of controlling your own future as a human being and as an artist. And he started asking me questions, or I should say the assistant. I'm guessing it was an assistant typing. It probably wasn't him. Although the assistant used his punctuation and capitalization and his, the I symbol for the word I. But suddenly, Prince started referring to me as Neo, as in Neo from The Matrix. And he kept doing it for the rest of the interview. Unfortunately, it was the pre-enlightenment Neo, right? So, but I usually leave that part out of the story because I don't know if there's three or four high points in my life, you know, my kids being born, marrying my wife, and being called Neo by Prince. That's pretty much the top four or five.
That's brilliant. Thank you for sharing that, Eric. We've finally got to the bottom of it. And and more recently, you've interviewed the superstar music producer and DJ Deadmau5. That was earlier this year for Streaming Media Connect, which was amazing. It was just so far removed from anything, you know, we're used to seeing, in this usually quite reserved and uptight industry and conferences. But, you know, from the audience point of view, where I was sat, once you saw through the fog of cigarette smoke and these expletive-laden anecdotes, it was a fascinating interview about the struggles of live streaming events, you know, playing around with codecs. And he really knew his stuff. So, I mean, yeah, how did that come about, Eric? How did you get Deadmau5 on the bill in the first place? And have you guys kept in touch?
We have not kept in touch. he is an investor in a streaming tech company. And that was a case of... To be honest with you, it was sort of one, I'll scratch your back, you'll scratch mine, right? They were able to bring Deadmau5 to the table, it gave them a little bit of exposure. But I was a little skeptical going in until, yes, as you mentioned, it became very apparent that this guy really knows his stuff, right? About the tech on a pretty deep level, talking about, as you said, codecs, one codec versus another, lossless and audio compression. It was really a fascinating discussion. And to be honest with you, I think that our industry as a whole could use a lot more of those kinds of speakers at industry events. That's one of the reasons I really think that what Evan Shapiro is doing is so valuable, because he brings a little bit of flash, but with lots of substance, to his presentations. I think our industry needs that, rather than just another guy in a navy blazer.
Absolutely. It's refreshing. There's no bullshit. All we need now is more women.
We need lots more women, and we need lots more diversity in the industry. And I'm glad to see that inroads are being made. But boy, you attend IBC or any other industry event and you take that step back and you look around and you see just how much more work needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. And, as I'm trawling through your employment history, Eric, I wanted to slide in a mention of philanthropy for the Help Me Stream Research Foundation. It says here you've been part-time chair there since early 2020. I mean, the clue is kind of in the name. But can you give our listeners who may not know about the Help Me Stream Research Foundation a quick rundown of what it's all about, and whether this is an actual charity or a front for a money laundering scheme?
I was just taking a drink of water when you said that. You waited.
That was a well-timed sip.
Yes, it was. Help Me Stream Research Foundation is a great organization started by Tim Siglin, who was one of my writers, contributing editors, and he's an industry veteran consultant going back decades, and he started the Help Me Stream Research Foundation as a way to bring streaming technology to developing countries. And there's also a companion organization that I apologize for blanking on the name, that is focusing on bringing streaming technology to the parts of the United States and other developed nations that still need it. He has been taking in lots of old kit from vendors in the industry, and individuals in the industry, and repurposing that kit to build essentially webcasting or streaming in a box that can be sent to communities in Africa and Latin America and elsewhere, to give those communities access to the sorts of things that you and I take for granted every day, like this sort of online video meeting interface that we're using to record this.
Doing some amazing work. And if you're listening to this, Tim, can you please accept my LinkedIn connection request, because you've been leaving me hanging for far too long. So, Eric, to summarize and kind of wrap up, the takeaway that I've got from this chat is that you've spent so long creating a simplified low-code streaming SDK with Norsk that, having digested some of the feedback, it might actually be too simple. So how do you solve that in time for NAB 2024? Do we expect a more complicated update? Does it just get progressively more complex?
No, absolutely not. that was one comment, but I think it was a telling one. And I, like I said, I do think it speaks to some of the underlying challenges in the broadcast and streaming industry, or industries. I mean, it's really one industry right now, isn't it? But no, I mean, we have no plans to complexify Norsk and make it harder for people to use. Like I said, I just think it speaks to the fact that the product really is disruptive, and it really does make people think, could this put me out of a job? I don't think it's going to put anybody out of a job, but it's going to allow it. It's similar in some ways to AI. If a product like Norsk can take care of the very complicated, specialized processes that need to be implemented, and allow then the companies using it to be more creative in what they're building, then that's then we've achieved the end goal.
AI is not a can of worms we're going to open today.
No,
maybe we
not.
Can save that conversation for NAB 2024.
Indeed.
So I think that's a good time to wrap up, Eric. So thank you so much for joining us today. That was a pleasure. A really interesting conversation that took a lot of turns.
Thanks, Tommy. I had a blast.
And thank you, everyone at home, for listening. And stay tuned for another episode of the Faultline podcast. Cheers, everyone.